Coming up, the Mass Department of Agriculture's commissioner, the man from Boston, Scott Soares, will be joining us with Phil Corman, the man from CISA. We'll be with them in just a moment. Good morning. Scott Soares is the commissioner of the Mass Department of Agricultural Resources. Formerly, it was, there has been a name change. We'll talk to the commissioner about it. Commissioner Soares, I really appreciate you taking the time to come wandering into our airless station here.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So you didn't used to be called the Mass Department of Agricultural Resources, and it trips so easily off the tongue.
That's right. Yeah.
What was the name of the department that you now are the commissioner?
We were the Department of Food and Agriculture.
And what's the difference now? I mean, you changed more than the name, and so what does the name reflect?
I think it's the change. It reflects a broader perspective from the agency at this point. We're really looking beyond just the food and agricultural aspects, and a lot of the things we're involved in now around food safety, food access, better public health issues. It's really broadened the scope of the Department of Agricultural Resources.
Well, I notice if I go to your website, there are things like pest alerts and the things like
exactly.
that. So it's a resource for Massachusetts farmers.
That's right.
As well as a networking point. It's also a point. It's a lobbying group, I would imagine, to some degree. It's an accessible point for lobbyists to.
Yeah.
Or for instance, the dairy industry and
yeah.
such. I can come.
Yeah, I was going to say we don't lobby.
That's right.
But it's really intended, and I'm glad you looked at the webpage. We just, in fact, went through a retooling of the webpage, a retooling of the agency, and carving up our divisions a little bit to be more effective to get those kinds of resources out to the public as well as to the farmers and throughout the Commonwealth.
Massachusetts, this part of Massachusetts, I'm sure you know, we feel like the poor stepchild, or we also clutch very closely to our breasts, our victimhood, which we're very good about. The thing is that we do feel that, you know, because Massachusetts is unique in some respect, is that its capital city is also its most populous, wealthiest city. That's
right.
Unusual for a lot of states, particularly states that have agriculture. And as a result, we think that our voices are diminished by distance in some sense. Mm. Yet we, of course, in this instance, we're the most rural region and probably have, I don't know, maybe you can tell me, do we have more agriculture, say, west of Worcester than we do Worcester East?
It's kind of split, actually. Worcester County is the biggest agricultural county in the state. But if we carve off, you know, the western part of the state, look at the four counties, we definitely see a broader and more diverse agricultural industry in the western part of the state with those four counties.
And here's Phil Corman, by the way. I forgot to introduce Phil. Phil's our man from CISA.
I was feeling shy, so I didn't jump on there. But the three counties, Hampshire, Franklin, and Hamden County, constitute about a third of the agricultural land in the state.
And in Commissioner, the agriculture that we have here, and you can pull the mic closer to you if you want, out east, where Jazz came from Plymouth, it's cranberry bogs. We don't have cranberry bogs here, but we also have, we have lumber, we have wood, we have dairy, well, diminishing dairy and the like, and crops as well.
That's right. You identified a good point to make, that we do have pockets of strong agriculture across the state, and cranberry industry is a great example from out in the eastern part of the state. But I think the diversity that we see in places like the western Massachusetts counties, because of some of the real unique characteristics that we have, soils around the Connecticut River Valley, as an example, really give us, not only in the state but nationally, some of the best soil in this country for agricultural production.
Yeah, we brag on the fact that we say it's the richest loam you'll find in the world.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that's provable, but, you know.
Well, if it's any demonstration, a friend of mine who put an addition on their house after the contractor finished digging the hole for the addition brought them their rock, their individual rock. And I can tell you that's not the case in the eastern part
right.
of the state.
Here's your one rock you can use for landscaping.
That's right.
Yeah, well, that's true. In the valley area, certainly rocks have been washed away, and there is a lot of loamy soil. Of course, we do have the hills, and we have the woods and such. But what's the state's focus for agriculture? Is it an industry with export prospects or more of a sustainable resource for consumers within the state?
Yeah, well, for us, we're fortunate to be among the top two states in the nation for the value of direct sales that's realized by our farmers. So direct marketing is definitely a key for us in this state and for our growers.
You mean local people buying from local people.
That's exactly right. And in fact, it's almost a requirement to have a healthy agricultural industry here in Massachusetts based on the costs that we have around farming in Massachusetts. We have the unfortunate distinction of also being the number one country, national, the number one state in the country to have the highest values of agricultural land in the nation.
That's another important point. And by the way, we're talking to Scott Soares, who's the commissioner of the Mass Department of Agricultural Resources. And one of the issues, of course, is that because we're a relatively small state and our agriculture is contained on open space that can be desirable for other developments and consequently the prices of those properties would be affected by that. And we see that, you know, the Hadley Route 9 corridor is a perfect example. It gets developed along Route 9. Former farmlands and farm stands are now being converted into Lowe's and Home Depots and such, but while at the same time retaining the backland. But so that the beauty of one of the appeals of preserving agriculture, of course, is to preserve open space as well.
Well, we refer to it more as working landscapes at this point because it's an important one. It's an important distinction because more than just being an open space, the reason those spaces are open is because they are, in fact, working landscapes. And, in fact, we're fortunate in this administration that Governor Patrick really put a strong commitment out there for working landscapes and open space protection in the beginning of his administration that we've been able to really fulfill in spite of some real difficult economic times and looking forward to continuing to do that kind of work.
So what you're trying to impart by changing the terminology is that it's more than just a pretty scene. We're not preserving it just to maintain a pretty scene. We're actually retaining it for the resources that it provides.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in fact, it's one way that we've been able to go out and address concerns that come up from time to time from people who might be moving into Western Mass, other places that do have open space, right, because of the farms that are there, and help them learn more about why those spaces are in fact open. That it's in fact a working farm. It's a working resource.
Phil.
So I just wanted to get back to the that notion about selling directly and how important it is, because we've actually in our three counties doubled the amount of farm products the farmers sell directly to the public in the last census taking. So it doubled to $9 million that stayed in the local economy. And I was telling Scott before that we added up all the farm shares that CSA Farms are now delivering, and it's 5,000 farm shares that were done this year, and 20% actually went to the Boston area. So with that high price of land Scott and I were talking about, it's just so vital to be able to sell directly. And, you know, our event's tomorrow night, and it's sold out, but it's called Eat the View. And for that same notion of if you're not buying directly from your farmers, there will not be that view you want to enjoy.
So we've talked about that on this program, and Scott Soares is the commissioner of the Mass Department of Agricultural Resources. We talked about this, the value of buying locally, sustaining locally, and it's not just a boutique expression, or it's not something that's just kind of a hip thing to do. There's an intrinsic and real value that can be realized by the residents.
Yeah. No, absolutely. In fact, one of the things that we've seen through the support of the Buy Local initiatives like CISA, we've asked the different buy locals to really get a good handle on why individuals are buying local, whether it's through farmers markets or CSAs or local farm stands. And food safety, food security, those kinds of issues are big and play well into the decisions of people to buy those local products.
Scott Soares, as I said, is the commissioner of the Department of Agricultural Resources. Can I keep you for a couple more moments? We're going to go to a break or come back. I want to talk to you about the other agricultural resource here in the Valley is wood.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about that when we come back with the commissioner. We'll be right back. Good morning. Our man from CISA is here, and the commissioner. The commissioner of Mass Department of Agricultural Resources, Scott Soares, is here. Phil Corman, our man from CISA, is here as well. And we're talking about Western Massachusetts agriculture, which seems like an appropriate topic to talk to Scott Soares about, besides the prospects for the Red Sox in the playoffs. One of the industries that dominates the western part of the state, whether it's a primary crop or if you consider it that, or if it's actually just an untapped resource, is lumber. The lumber, we got trees. Once upon a time, a long time ago, this entire part of the state was denuded. It was just fields harvested, and people raised sheep or whatever and grew crops and stuff. and now we have trees. These are second growth forests. And one of the resources that lumber can be used for, besides building and such, an easier resource for many is to burn it. And to burn it, in some cases, we have two controversial biomass plants. Actually, that's redundant. I should just say we have two biomass plants and being considered here, or in the precipice of being established, and they need that biomass, which is a euphemism for wood. Where are you guys in this whole issue? As far as, I mean, because clearly departments have interlinking connections. I mean, you mentioned you guys are connected with health, for instance, on one level. So on this level, I imagine economic development and energy
will
be part of it, too.
That's right. Well, for us, it's historically, forests have been and woodlands have been an important part of any kind of agricultural operation. In fact, we see many of our agricultural operations that rely on wood products as a part of their sustaining their individual businesses. And burning of that that material has also been a part of it. So whether it's firewood, you know, activity or maple syrup activity or, you know, other kinds of forest wood products where they're making specialty products for white pine flooring, as an example, it's been a longstanding agricultural component. I think recently, because of what's happened with fuel and with more in the way of our own energy independence, that we're looking at all of the different resources that are possibly out there. And biomass is one of those that has been looked at. In fact, already in Massachusetts, we've had a number of smaller regional operations, Cooley Dickinson, Mount Wachusett Community College, that have done well by their ability to install these biomass and incinerators that are used either as a part of a cogeneration operation or as a way to offset other fuel costs, energy costs that they have. So the issues under examination now are, in fact, under examination to look at to the extent that we can have what scale those should be across the Commonwealth. We do have 66% of our Commonwealth is, in fact, wooded. A lot of those woods have material in them that could be used for that purpose, not entirely for that purpose, but could be used and have been used on some scale in the past. So it's something that we're examining now.
Also, to a different extent, that the other alternative forms of energy involve wind farms, which require usually crest lines or open space that have wind, and then, of course, solar fields. So there's a controversy just in the next town over in East Hampton. There's a capped landfill that's an open space. Mm-hmm. It's a protected open space because you can't build on it. It's a brownfield of sorts.
Yeah.
And putting a solar field has generated controversy as well, and usually by abutters or people proximate to the system tend to be concerned about the impact that it would have on their quality of life or their ability to stay healthy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are you guys struggling with the same issue? Is it trying to cope and accommodate the needs of abutters and communities and the resources that you guys ride herd on?
Yeah, absolutely. And for the farming industry, I have to say that they were and have been early adopters of many of those technologies, really looking at them as a way to change and their viability and to make their businesses more viable. And as those things change, we do get concerns from time to time as those kinds of things happen between neighbors and different issues that come up between those neighbors.
We, you know, and when we were off the air, we were talking a little bit about, and this is kind of very relevant to having you here as well. And mm-hmm. by the way, I could spend another hour and a half with you, but I'm sorry. I opened by suggesting that we're the poor stepchild. Yeah. Or that's our perception. Do you have some sense? Clearly, you have some sense of the Boston's commitment and dedication to the western part of the state, or how many resources you've devoted to this area.
Yeah.
Can you give me an idea what that looks like?
Absolutely. And to give you a little bit of history, I started with the department back in 1996, so I have some familiarity with previous administrations and their support of agriculture generally. And I have to say that this administration has been by far the most supportive of agriculture in my history being with the department, and probably before that. In fact, we've spent more than three-quarters of our budget, the Department of Ag Resources, on the primary programs around ag preservation restrictions, ag environmental enhancement programs, energy programs that we just launched this past year, and the ag environmental enhancement program. 75% of the funds from those programs, in fact, have been spent in the four counties of Western Massachusetts.
Well, I mean, you also recently, you guys, the governor advanced a dairy initiative. Can you describe what that is and what that does for local regional dairy farms?
Sure. Actually, I had the opportunity back in 2007 when I was acting commissioner to work on a task force effort to really examine what the problems were, constraints around the ag industry and the dairy industry in particular. And as a result of that work, we were able to develop legislation that, in fact, was passed within 12 months, lightning speed by any measure.
Yeah, unless you're trying to get trying to get an interim senator in place. But
it really gave us tools to work with the dairy industry and help stay lost, present some kind of safety net measures. We've since now still worked with the dairy industry, now looking more at a regional milk shed at this point. Just recently, I was with Mike.
A milk shed similar to a watershed?
Exactly.
Yeah, in terms, because I also had an image of a place where a shed where you could go and get a milkshake. But
that's
okay. But yes, so like a watershed, a region that informs a dairy system.
That's exactly right, and the infrastructure that is required to support that industry throughout the Northeast region is important here in Massachusetts, as it is in Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. So we've been working with my counterparts from Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, Connecticut, Rhode Island, to launch a Keep Local Farms initiative that, in fact, I'm going to talk more about today in Boston, to really give consumers the opportunity that are saying they want to pay more for milk if, in fact, they have the opportunity to pay more for milk and know that that goes directly to the farmers. They want that opportunity. So this effort is really to try to facilitate that effort and allow individuals to pay more for milk with the assurance that it would go to support dairy farms.
Scott Soares is the commissioner from the Mass Department of Agricultural Resources. And I got to say, and I think Phil's probably going to back me up on this, is that in this region, we have clearly demonstrated the fact that we will pay more from locally produced milk that we know has reduced the carbon footprint. But more importantly, we know the face of the person who generated that milk, who you know, milked those cows and processed that milk and delivered it to us.
So Maple Line and our family farms are just two of them, and there's lots of farmers who do cheeses, and that's wonderful. One last thing I wanted to throw out, Bill, a little bit of a non sequitur, but we're going to be working on Winter Fair in Northampton, and on Tuesday night, October 6th, coming up at 6:30 p.m., there will be a meeting for anyone who wants to help us pull off a one-day winter market in Northampton. A little more information at our website at buylocalfood.org.
A winter market to lay in the root vegetables?
It will be either January, February. You could be able to buy loads of things that are local at that one-day winter market.
Scott Soares, we've got just seconds left. So I just, in that time, I just want to thank you for making the time to come talk to us. I'd like to invite you back if we can have you on.
Oh, it'd be my pleasure, Bill. Thanks for having me.
All right. I really appreciate the time. Yeah, next time we can talk about tobacco blight march on the weekend.
And then somebody else, too.